I used to think when I was younger that when I won you, I won a princess who would love me forever, and happily we'd grow old together, and hand in hand we'd face old age without fear. But it hasn't worked out that way. I can't go on this way, loving you but taking Vera in your place. You drain me dry, Adrina. You take my heart and wring it, forcing me to run to Vera for solace. When it's over, I find only physical satisfaction but no spiritual sustenance. Only you can give me that. How can you expect me to go on wanting you when you don't want me in the same way? Love is like a fire that needs replenishing often, not just with tender smiles and light touches, but with passion too. Let's do it again, our honeymoon night, without doors between us to hide behind, without shame. Make love to me now, right now, out of doors, here where we are. Damien is in town, Vera is gone, Sylvia was in that damned rocking chair singing to herself before I came out here, and she's likely to stay there until she falls asleep.
He was touching my heart, caressing me with his eyes and stirring my blood as he'd never done before. His amber eyes burned, even his hand seemed hot when he touched my face lightly. Quickly he withdrew his hand as if my flesh felt as hot as his.
Darling, marriage needs to grow. Become adventuresome. Do something that you've never done before. I don't care what. Make love to me this time. Don't wait for me to start.
No, I thought. I couldn't do that. It was a man's duty to make the first overture. It would be cheap and unladylike to touch him first. But his eyes were imploring, lit up with desire. I didn't deserve him. He should leave me alone, for in the end I'd fail him. Still, I wanted him. Something was telling me to do as he said, regardless of what Papa had said about men and their evil desires that shamed the women who did as they wanted. Papa had brainwashed me long ago, I told myself, and this time I was going to override all the signals that flashed evil, dirty, nasty. It wasn't easy to drown out all that shouted shame. I didn't even think I could initiate anything unless he kept on looking at me as he was now. He made himself vulnerable, put his hands behind his back, and resisted his urges to touch me first. I fought the small voices instilled by Papa and his teachings. No, he was my husband, and I did love him, and he really did love me. I'm scared, Arden. So scared of losing you to Vera. His eyes were warm, soft, encouraging me. Deep and passionate eyes that kept urging me to go ahead and it wouldn't be his lust, only my own desire, and for some reason, that seemed to make a great difference. What I did would be what I wanted to do, and if it was evil, then let it be evil. Arden needed me. He loved me and not Vera. Tentatively, I cupped his face between my palms. He didn't move. His hand stayed behind his back. I kissed him lightly on his cheeks, his forehead, his chin, and, finally, his lips. They stayed soft, but not too soft, and parted only a little. Again I kissed him, with more passion, and still he didn't respond. He was like someone I could do anything with, and he'd never harm me. I dared another kiss that was deep and long, even as my hands curved around him and began to stroke his back, right down to his buttocks. Something was coming alive in me as he allowed me to do what I wanted, without his doing anything to me or requesting or hinting. Passion such as I'd never felt before began to swell, deep and hot and demanding in me. My breasts grew larger and peaked with demand as I ached to have his hands on my flesh, needing his body, wanting him inside me. My breath began to come faster, his too, but still he didn't reach to drag me down or pull off my clothes. I was the one who tore at his shirt. Off with his belt, too. Then I unzipped his trousers and threw them aside. Shamelessly, I pulled down his briefs, and even then, he didn't touch me, though he rose up on his knees to allow me to rid him of all that he wore and fell on his back so I could pull off his shoes and socks. He seemed so eager he was impatient, but it seemed ridiculous to me to keep on shoes and socks. Not a word did he say as I fell upon him to kiss him everywhere and fondle everywhere until at last I could wait no longer. Under a clear blue sky, with the hot sun beating down, I guided his penetration. This time, this marvelous first time, I really allowed myself to enjoy the feel of him inside me, lifting me with him into the kind of paradise I'd read about but never experienced. And when his arms finally clasped me, I groaned from the pure ecstasy of having made him one with me at last.
"You're crying,"
he said when it was over.
"It was so wonderful. I finally reached you, Adrina. After trying so long, I've broken through that barrier you put up a long time ago."
Yes, he was right. A barrier that Papa had constructed to keep me always bound to him.
"Sometimes I thought it was because you just didn't love me as a man, only as a companion."
"And still you kept right on loving me?" I asked with wonder.
"I could never stop loving you, no matter what."
His voice was hoarse, gritty with emotion.
"You're in my blood, part of my soul. If you never let me touch you again, I'd still want to wake up and see you asleep beside me. I said what I did only to shake you up and make you fear you might lose me to Vera. Adrina, there are times when you seem so remote and aloof, almost as if you're in a trance or caught in a spell."
Quickly, I leaned to kiss him, to stroke where I'd never wanted to touch before. He groaned with the joy and held me tighter.
"If ever I should be so unfortunate as to lose you, I'd look the world over until I had another Adrina. So that means I'd go to my grave still searching, for there will never be another you."
"Another Adrina? Did you know another Adrina?" I asked with a shiver that raced up and down my spine. Why had he said that? His hands were warm on my skin, his eyes warmer.
"It's just my way of saying I have to have you and no one else."
It was sweet to hear him say that, and I easily shook off the sudden chill of apprehension and forced some leaden weight away from my soul, from my heart and conscience. Young and joyous as I'd never been, I laughed and turned to him again. I teased him with kisses and small touches, and wantonly I explored his body as many times he'd explored mine. For I loved him so much then that I could have died for him. And once I'd thought all this so sinful and evil. Damn Papa for making me think that, for spoiling what could have been like this all the time. Twilight flooded the sky with its rosy farewell to the day, flaming the cloud bottoms crimson, streaking violet shot through with saffron. Folded in his arms, I watched the sun sink into the bay beyond the river. I watched as Arden fell fast asleep. For the first time after making love, I felt clean and worthy of staying alive. Unlike Papa, who loved the first Adrina best, Arden loved me for what I was, not for what he wanted me to be. I wrapped him in my arms as I watched the colors reflected on the water, different from the colors in the house. I lay there and began to think I hated all that stained glass, all those Tiffany lamps and shades, all that art deco and other false man-made colors that gave me false fears. What did I have to fear now? In the middle of the night, I awakened. I thought I heard Sylvia calling my name. Adrina. Softly, repeatedly, my name called like that. "I'm coming, Sylvia," I thought, waved to her, as I often did, and somehow my messages seemed to reach her. First, I had to lift Arden's arm from my waist. Then carefully I shifted from the heavy weight of his leg thrown over both of mine. When I was free, I bent above him and stroked his cheek, kissed his lips.
"Don't go. Where are you going?"
he sleepily asked. "I'll be back in a few minutes," I whispered.
"You'd better be,"
he murmured sleepily, exhausted from hours of making love.
"Need you again. Soon."
And then he slept. Sylvia was deeply asleep, curled up on her side, looking angelic in sleep as she always did. I kissed her, too, feeling full of love for everyone. Asleep, she had never looked anything but beautiful and normal. On the way back to where Arden slept and waited, I thought I heard my name called again. It seemed to come from the playroom, her bedroom. Was she jealous because now I'd found a man who loved me more than anyone had loved her? I had to go to the playroom. I had to go and face up to her terror, which had always prevented me from enjoying Arden as I should have. It was in that rocking chair that I'd seen the three boys assault the first Adrina, and that had been the first step to force me away from normalcy. The second step, to take me even further away from ever enjoying sex, was Papa and all the things he'd done to Mama and said to me. And the third step, taking me miles and miles away, was Papa's indifference to how he hurt my aunt. But it wasn't my horror, I told myself. It was Papa's. It was hers, too. That first daughter who'd died before I was born. Again upon a rainy day. What compulsion had driven me to the first Adrina's room and forced me into this chair where I sang foolishly? As I rocked, an ingrained terror of this chair that had tormented my childhood stole over me and made me a child again. Something whispered and told me to get out and leave before it was too late. "Go back to Arden," said a wise part of me. "Forget the past that can't be changed. Go back to Arden." "No," I said to myself. I had to be strong. I had to overcome my fears, and the only way to do it was to deliberately evoke the rainy day scene and make it happen again. This time I'd stay with it until she died, and cast her memory forever from my life. As I'd done before as a child, so I did again as a woman. I rocked and I sang, and soon enough the walls softened and became porous, before molecules divided, and I was inside the first Adrina's memory again. I saw my mother as she must have been when the first Adrina was alive, looking so young and pretty as she warned, "Adrina, promise you will never take the shortcut through the woods. It's dangerous for young girls to go there alone." She was wearing one of her lovely watercolor-printed voile dresses that fluttered in the breezes cooled by the river. All her favorite colors and mine were in that dress, shades of green, blue, violet, aqua, and rose. Her beautiful hair was loose and bannering out. Even as I thought all of this, I was planning to disobey and take the shortcut home. Mama stooped to kiss my cheek. "Now, obey me, even if you are late for your own birthday party. It can't start until you arrive anyway. Just forget the shortcut and ride the school bus home." But Spencer Longtree rode the school bus with his gang of roughneck buddies. They said such nasty, ugly things to me. I couldn't tell her the awful things they said. "U-G-L-Y," shrilled Spencer Longtree, who hadn't taken the school bus home. Risking the woods wasn't sparing me his awful presence. "Adrina Adair has got ugly hair. Spelled..." "I already know how to spell ugly, Spencer Longtree," I threw over my shoulder. "And that's a description that fits you just F-I-N-E.
"I'll get you for that. And maybe when you've been had, you won't feel so high and mighty just because you're one of the white ferns who live in a fancy big house."
Time to run, to skip, to hop, and have fun in the woods where all the little animals hid. Look at the rain clouds overhead. They hid the sun and made it dark. Would the storm reach me before I reached home? Ruin my dress? Frizz my curls? Mama would throw a fit if I didn't look prettier than any other girl at my party. And this silly kind of dress water-spotted and shrank, too. The rain came down. I took the faint and winding path at full speed, feeling the silky whisper of my ruined dress as it clung to my legs. Yards ahead, I thought I saw the bushes by the path move. I paused, ready to spin around and flee. The thickness of the leaves above made a kind of canopy that caused the rain to fall in exceedingly large drops. They splashed down on the dirt before me, making dark polka dots that swiftly blended until all the dirt went dark and muddy. Some people whistled when they felt afraid. I didn't know how to whistle. I could sing. "Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday, dear Adrina, happy I broke off my song and froze. A definite movement in the bushes ahead, a muffled giggle. I turned to run the other way, then glanced back and saw three boys jump out from behind those thorny bushes that lined the faint path. Scratches bloodied their faces and made them seem fearsome, yet they also seemed silly. Stupid, silly boys. Did they think they could catch me? I could run faster than Aunt Elsbeth, who had boasted she could outrun anybody as a child. Just when I thought I'd outraced them, one boy bounded ahead and seized me by my long hair. He almost ripped it from my scalp. It hurt so much. "Stop that, you beast!" I screamed. "Let me go! It's my birthday! Let me go!"
"We know it hurts,"
Spencer Longtree's raspy voice snarled.
"We're glad it hurts. It's our birthday gift to you, Adrina. Happy 9th birthday, White Fern girl."
"You stop pulling my hair. Take your filthy hands off me. You're ruining my dress. Leave me alone. You just dare to do one thing to hurt me, and my papa will see all of you put in jail and burned." Spencer Longtree grinned. His buck teeth seemed fit for a horse. He thrust his long face full of pimples closer to mine. His breath smelled bad.
"Do you know what we're going to do to you, pretty face?"
"You're going to let me go," I said defiantly. But something in me quivered. Sudden fear made my knees weak, made my heart beat faster, made my blood sink into my heels.
"No,"
he growled.
"We're not going to let you go. Not until we're finished. We're going to rip off all those pretty clothes, tear off your underwear, and you're going to be naked, and we're going to see everything."
"You can't do that," I began staunchly, trying to be brave. "All the Adair women born with my color hair can put the curse of death on those that harm them. So beware of your life when you harm me, Spencer Longtree spider legs. With my violet eyes, I can burn you with the fires of eternal hell while you still live." Sneering, he shoved his face so close his nose touched mine. Another boy grabbed my arms and pinioned them behind me.
"Go on, witch,"
he said.
"Do your worst."
The rain plastered his hair to his forehead in a fringe of spikes.
"Curse me now and save yourself. Go on, do it, or in another few seconds, I'm going to take off my pants and my buddies are going to hold you down, and each one of us will have our turn."
I screamed out, "I curse you, Spencer Longtree, Curtis Shea, and Hank Barnes! May the devil in hell claim all three of you for his own!" For a moment they hesitated, making me think it was going to work. Looking from one to the other gave me the chance to run, but just then, a fourth boy rose up from behind the same bushes they'd used to hide, and I froze and stared at him. His dark hair was wet and glued to his face, too. I swallowed and grew weak. All my blood turned to rainwater. Oh, no. Not him, too. Not him, too. Never him. He wouldn't do this. He'd come to save me. That's why he was here. I called his name, pleaded with him to save me. He seemed in a trance, staring blindly ahead. What was wrong with him? Why didn't he pick up a stick, a stone, hit them, batter them with his bare fists, do something to help? This wasn't the way it was supposed to be. He was my friend. He stood there more petrified than I was. I cried out his name, and he turned and ran. My mouth opened to call him back, but a dirty rag was stuffed inside.
"I was wrong, Adrina. You really are a pretty thing."
They ripped off my clothes. My new dress was torn from neck to hem and hurled away to land on a bush under the golden rain tree. Next, my pretty petticoat with the Irish lace and the hand-embroidered shamrocks was ripped off and trampled in the mud. I fought like crazy when rough hands tried to pull down my panties, kicking, screaming, twisting, turning, trying to tear violating eyes from their sockets. Then the lightning flashed. The thunder rolled. I was terrified of being outside in an electrical storm. I screamed again. It happened fast, but not mercifully fast enough. My pretty underpants were yanked down and torn off. My legs were spread wide as one boy held me under my chin. And every one of those three participated in my desecration. Even as I was being despoiled, I kept thinking of him, that coward who'd turned and run. He could have stayed to fight, even if he lost, for then I could forgive him. Maybe they'd have killed him, like they were really killing me. Better that than this. I came back to the rocking chair in the playroom. My eyes were wide, so wide they hurt. I'd seen him again, with the rain pasting his hair to his face. Arden. That was the name she'd called, and he'd run. Oh, the lies they'd told me to shield me from knowing just who Arden was. Oh, no wonder Papa had warned me against all boys, and Arden most of all. Papa knew him for what he was. A coward, as bad as the others, maybe worse, for she'd known him, trusted him, thought him her friend, and then he'd turned to me years later? He'd been there. Through me, he was redeeming himself. Oh, oh, oh. Now I knew why my memory was full of holes. I'd seen him before in visions many times, and had made myself forget that he'd been there when those boys had raped, then killed her, just because she was a white fern and all the villagers hated white ferns. Papa had lied to me when he said the first Adrina was 9 years older. Vera had told the truth. And Papa had put me in the rocking chair so I could capture contentment and peace. He'd taken my empty pitcher and filled it with horror so that never again could I trust anything male. I sobbed, knowing I'd betrayed her too and married the friend she'd hoped would protect her and fight for her. And he'd run. I jumped from the chair and ran from the room. Oh, if only I'd known before, I would never have gone to his cottage. This day would never have happened. Papa, why didn't you tell me all the details about your first daughter? Why did you hold back so much? Didn't you know the truth always serves the purpose better than a lie? Lies. So many lies. And to think Vera had told me the truth all the time when she said she'd known the first Adrina, who was so much better than me. Prettier, smarter, more fun. As I ran toward my room, determined to wake Arden and face him with the truth, a glass lamp came on. Next, a flashlight was shown directly into my eyes. Blinded by the lights after the darkness of the hallway, I barely made out the vagueness of a hand that dangled a crystal prism before the beam of strong battery light. Colors refracted in my eyes. I staggered backwards, throwing up my hand to shield my eyes from the light. Then I turned to run. Someone followed. I heard the thump of footfalls. I screamed, whirled around and shouted, "Arden, have you come to finish what they started? What are you trying to do to me?" More lights came on, strung down the main upstairs corridor where hundreds of crystal prisms, catching colors, sparkling, stabbing and blinding me, threatening me. I spun about, confused and disoriented, unable to find the direction of my bedroom. Then the hands that struck me on the shoulders from behind. Hard, strong hands that sent me pitching forward into space and down, 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 hurting all the way until my head struck, and then blackness. Whispering. Whispering on the shallow waves of evening tide, voices drifted. They called. Forced me back from a place I couldn't name. Was this me? This tiny pepper dot in the sky? How could I see above, below, behind, and before? Was I only an eye in the sky, seeing everything, understanding nothing? Whose name was that I heard spoken so softly? Mine? Whose room was this? Mine? On a narrow bed I lay, staring up at the ceiling. Fuzzily, I made out the dresser across the way with its wide mirror that reflected what was in back of my bed. My vision cleared more so I could see the white chaise lounge that Arden had wanted me to have. White Fern. I was still in White Fern. In the adjacent room, Vera's voice drifted to me as she spoke softly to Arden. I cringed, or tried to. Something was wrong with me, but I didn't have time to dwell on that. I had to concentrate on what Vera was saying.
"Arden," she continued in a stronger voice, "why do you keep objecting? It's for your own good, for hers too. Certainly you know she'd want it that way."
"What way?"
"Vera,"
answered the unmistakable voice of my husband,
"you have to give me time to make a decision like that, an irreversible decision."
"I've had about all I can take from you and from her," said Vera. "You have to decide just who you want, her or me. Do you think I'm going to hang around here forever waiting for you to choose?"
But,
stammered my husband.
"At any moment, any day, maybe today or tomorrow, she could pull out of the coma."
Coma? I was in a coma? I couldn't believe this. I could fuzzily see, Hazelly here. That had to mean something, didn't it?
Arden, said Vera's deep and sultry voice. I'm a nurse, and I know about things you've never heard of. No one can stay in a coma 3 weeks and pull out of it without irreversible brain damage. Think about that for a while. A long while. You'd be married to a living vegetable to burden the rest of your life. When Damien is dead, you'd have Sylvia too. Don't forget her. With the two of them to care for, you'd be praying to God that you'd done as I suggested. But then it would be too late. I'd be gone, and you, my dear, would never have the courage to do it alone.
Courage to do what? The two of them were coming closer. I wanted to turn my head and watch them enter my room. I wanted to see Arden's expression and watch Vera's eyes and see if she really loved him. I wanted to swing my feet to the floor and rise, but I couldn't move. Not anything. I could only lie there, a stiff, still thing, feeling only mental anguish and an unbearable sense of loss. Again and again I was flooded with panic, drowning in panic. How could this have happened? Wasn't I the same as earlier today, last night, yesterday? What had made me this way?
Vera, my darling,
said Arden, now sounding even closer.
You don't understand how I feel. So help me, God, even as she is, I still can't help loving my wife. I want Adrina to recover. Every morning before I leave for work, I come in here and kneel by her bed and pray for her recovery. Every night before I go to bed, I do the same thing. I kneel and wait for her eyes to open, for her lips to part, for her to speak. I dream about seeing her well and healthy again. I'm in hell, and I'll never be free of hell until she's herself again. Just one sign of life, and I'd never, never consent.
He paused, sobbed, choked out.
Even as she is, I don't want her to die.
But Vera did. I knew now that somehow Vera was responsible for this situation, as she was responsible for the most disastrous events in my life.
All right, shrilled Vera. If you still love Adrina, then you cannot possibly be in love with me. You have used me, Arden. Used me. Stolen from me, too. For all I know, I may be carrying your child again, as I carried your child once before and you didn't know it.
One time between us, then, Vera. Only one. You don't know that I was the one responsible. The odds against it were too great. You came to me, too, and let me know you wanted me and were willing to do anything, and I was young, and Adrina was still a child.
And she will always be a child, Vera shrilled. Then her voice dropped an octave as she continued to persuade. You wanted me to. You took me and you enjoyed it. And I had to pay the price. Oh, God. Oh, God. On and on, all of us kept paying prices, I thought, my mind going in circles as I tried to grasp at something stable. But if you love her, Arden, then you keep her. And I hope her arms will give you comfort when you need it, and her kisses will warm your lips, and her passion will satisfy your desire. Lord knows I've never known a man who needs a woman more than you do. And don't you stand there and think you can hire another nurse to take my place. You may not know this, but Adrina needs me. Sylvia needs me too. Somehow, despite all you've said about Sylvia not responding to anyone but your dear wife, I've managed to make Sylvia trust and even like me.
Sylvia doesn't trust or like anyone but Adrina,
Arden said. I stared at Vera. Her shining apricot hair peeked out below a starched white cap. Every strand was perfectly in place. Her pale complexion appeared as soft as putty, but even so, she was very pretty wearing white, with those glittering black eyes of hers. Hard, cruel, spider eyes, I thought. Just as I used to do, she cupped Arden's handsome face between her hands, resting her long crimson fingernails on his cheeks. Sweetheart, there are many ways to know when Sylvia is trusting. I'm beginning to know her. Oh, God. Sylvia shouldn't trust and believe in Vera. Of all people, not Vera. As if she heard me speak, Sylvia shuffled forward into view. I sensed she must have risen from her perpetual crouch and realized, too, that she was desperate now that I could no longer protect her. In her meandering way, she advanced toward my bed as if to shield me. Poor Sylvia. All I wanted was to keep her safe, and now she had to keep me safe. Her aquamarine eyes stared at me blankly, as if she saw through me, beyond me, and into some far, far distance. Sylvia, Sylvia, what a burden she'd always been. My cross to bear for the rest of my life. Now I was the cross for someone else to bear. I tried to swallow the self-pity I felt and found I could barely manage to make my throat muscles move. I went on thinking of that far-ago day when I was 11 and Papa had brought Sylvia home for the first time. My baby sister, who was 9 years younger and born on my very birthday. Cursed, the White Fern girls, each born 9 years apart. Or was that why my Aunt Elspeth had always said, odd, so odd? And she'd looked at me as if to give me a clue. And of course it was odd. My life was built on lies. That older Adrina had not been 9 years my senior. Why was I thinking as I was? Something was in the back of my brain. Something that had happened in the playroom. Something that made me hate Arden.
"Goodbye, Arden,"
Vera said, breaking into my reverie as she moved toward the door, leaving my husband staring after her with a stricken expression. Suddenly, all that the rocking chair had revealed came back, and I remembered what he had done to the first dead Adrina. Still, I ached for his terrible dilemma, to keep me, now a nothing thing, and to keep Sylvia, a mindless, wandering creature, or to leave and take what happiness he could find, or steal.
"Don't go,"
cried Arden. His voice was deep and hoarse, as if the words were torn from his throat against his will.
"I need you, Vera. I love you. Maybe not in the same way I love my wife, but it's love nevertheless. I'll do what you want, anything you want. Just give me a little more time. Give Adrina a little more time, and promise you won't harm Sylvia."
Vera came forward again, all smiles, her spider eyes sparkling. Her voluptuous figure swayed from side to side as she glided into my husband's eager, open arms. Together they melded, to move in rhythm to silent music, as their earthy lust began right before my eyes. Sometimes nature was kind. My vision fogged. I began to drift away, but etched deep on my brain was the thought that I had to save Sylvia and rid Arden of a woman who would ruin his manhood in the end. Still, why should I care? He'd failed the first Adrina, too, when she needed him most. And that's when I knew. Arden was mine to punish, not Vera's. I had to stay alive for Sylvia, to save her from an institution. Papa had to be somewhere. I had to save him, too, from Vera. But how, when I couldn't move or speak? As the monotonous days slowly passed, I began to really know Vera as never before, by the cruel words she said to me. Thinking I couldn't hear, she always spoke the truth.
"I wish you could hear and see me, Adrina. I'm having sex with your beloved Arden. He calls it making love, but I know what it is. He's going to pay for everything I've been through to win him. He's going to give me the world, this house, Papa's fortune, and everything this monstrosity holds will be sold at auction. As soon as I have everything in my name, I'll get rid of Sylvia. And Papa, too."
She laughed cruelly. Arden is so appealing in some ways, so dependent on women for his happiness. A man is a fool to allow that to happen. I admire a man who always keeps his wife in her proper place, but I'll be the man in our family. Sooner or later, Arden will be mine. Never doubt that. Her long nails scratched as she brutally rolled me over onto my side to change the sheets. She'd placed me so precariously near the edge I almost fell to the floor. By my hair and one bare leg, I was seized and yanked back to safety. She delivered a hard slap on my bare bottom, as if I'd purposefully tried to roll off the bed. Next, she moved me from my side over onto my back, came around to the opposite side of my bed, and finished tucking in the clean sheet before she stared at my naked body in an appraising way. It was so awful to be naked and vulnerable and unable to help myself, and her eyes were no kinder than those ravishing eyes of the boys in the woods.
"Yes, I can see why he loved you once."
"Nice breasts," she said, pinching my nipples so I felt a dull pain. Pain. That meant I was going to recover. If she gave me time.
Slim waist, too. Flat stomach. Nice. Very nice.
But your beauty is leaving, Adrina darling. Leaving fast. All those rich young curves he loves will soon be flabby flesh to hang and droop, and he won't want you back then. I lay staring at the ceiling high above. Where was Papa? Why didn't he visit me? In the corner, Sylvia leaned forward, her aqua eyes in focus as she studied Vera intently. Warily, she was inching closer and closer, too. I could barely see the drift of her long hair in the dimness of the large room, yet I kept willing her to do something to help. If you don't want to be put away in one of those awful places, help me, Sylvia. Help me. Do something to save my life and your own, too. Sylvia had inched forward enough to find a spot of random sunlight that fell on her hair and turned it copper. In her hand, she turned the crystal prism constantly, like a baby watching the colorful light rays sparkle myriad rainbows about the room. One ray of scarlet and orange she beamed directly into Vera's spider eyes.
"Stop that!" yelled Vera. "That's what you did to my mother, wasn't it? You did it to Billy, too, didn't you?"
Crab-like, Sylvia sidled back to her place in the shadows, keeping a watchful eye on me, on Vera. On and on Vera rambled, as if I were her confessor, and when she put me in the ground, I'd take her secrets with me, and never again would she be haunted by any of the awful things she'd done.
"You know something, dear sister? There are times when I think Arden believes it was me who shoved his mother down the stairs. When he thinks I'm sleeping, he rests on one elbow and stares down into my face, and it makes me wonder if I talk in my sleep and say things he hears. He talks in his sleep. He says your name, trying to call you back from wherever you are, and if I wake him up, he turns from me unless I want to make love. I sense that's all he wants from me. In many ways, I don't think he trusts me, and doesn't really love me, only needs me now and then. But I'll make him love me more than he loves you. 10 times more than he loves you. You were never a real wife to him, Adrina. How could you be after what happened?"
Brittle as thin glass, her laughter tinkled, like the wind chimes in the cupola. "Wasn't it a nice birthday present those boys had for Adrina?" Arden came into the room just then. He seized Vera by the shoulders.
"What are you saying to her? She might be able to hear. Her doctors tell me that sometimes a patient in a coma can see and hear and think and no one knows it. Please, Vera, even if she dies, I want her to die believing in me and loving me still."
Again she laughed.
"So it is true. You were there, and you did nothing to save her. What a boyfriend you turned out to be. You ran, Arden. Ran. But I can understand, really I can. They were so much older and bigger, and you had to think of yourself."
Confused, I tried to put all this together. At last I knew the secret of the first Adrina, who had not been 9 years older. But why had Papa told me such a silly lie? What difference would it have made just to tell me the truth? That meant Vera must have played with the first and best, and truly she did know her and had liked her so much I could never take her place. But then I must have known her too. My head began to ache. Lies. My whole life constructed on lies that really didn't make any sense. Day after day, Vera tended me with loathing, looked at me with disgust, brushed my hair ruthlessly so that much of it came out. With unsanitary methods, she inserted a catheter, even when Arden was in the room. Thank God he had enough respect for me and the decency to turn away. But often, when Vera was somewhere else in the house, my husband came to me and talked softly as he gently moved my arms and legs.
"Darling, wake up. I want you to recover. I'm doing what I can to keep your legs and arms from becoming atrophied. Vera tells me it won't do any good, but your doctors say it will. She doesn't like for me to talk to them unless she's there, too. For some reason, they seem terribly reluctant to say anything. Perhaps Vera has been trying to protect me from knowing too much.
She nags me every day to pull your life support system. She doesn't have the nerve herself. Oh, Adrina, if only you could save yourself and save me from doing something that will ruin the rest of my life. She tells me I'm weak, and maybe I am. For when I see you day after day like this, I think perhaps you would be better off dead. Then I think, no, you'll recover. But Adrina, if you grow much thinner, you'll wither away to nothing, even if Vera and I do nothing.
He was weak. He'd failed her, and he'd failed me. Despite all his declarations of love, he still went to Vera every night. Then one day, when I'd just about given up hope, Papa came into my room with tears in his eyes that fell onto my face like warm summer rain. I tried to blink my eyes to let him know I was conscious, but I had no control over my eyelids. They popped open or closed without my will.
Adrina,
he cried, falling down on his knees and clutching at my thin, slack hand.
I can't let you die. I've lost so many women in my life. Come back. Don't leave me alone with only Vera and Sylvia. They're not what I need or want. It's always been you I've counted on to last. God forgive me if I've put a burden on you by loving you too much.
I was tired of Papa, too. If Papa came to me again, I wasn't conscious. The next time I woke up, it seemed weeks later. But I was now as I had been as a child. I had no sense of time, so how could I know? Again, I was in the bed. My room was empty but for me. The house was so quiet, it felt so huge and empty all around me. I lay there paralyzed and tried to think of what I could do to escape while Vera was occupied elsewhere. The door opened, and Arden and Vera came in together. She was talking to him in an irritated tone.
Arden, sometimes you are more of a boy than a man. There must be some legal way we can force Damien to leave you his money when he dies. Certainly he must realize Adrina can't outlive him and wouldn't benefit from his millions.
But Sylvia will always need care, Vera. I don't blame Damien for looking out for her. If or when Adrina should die, he's having it drawn into his will that if Sylvia is put in an institution or dies, my share that would come from Adrina's will be cut off. He's putting it in a trust fund so it will be doled out monthly. I don't care if he leaves me anything. I can always earn enough to keep us fed, clothed, and housed.
Fed, clothed, and housed? Is that all you want out of life? There's a world of glamour and pleasure beyond the walls of this museum. Go after it. If you don't, I will. Arden, look at me. I'm 25, 1 year younger than you are. Life moves so swiftly. Soon we'll both be 30. It's now or never. What good does lots of money do when you're too old to enjoy it? What good are beautiful clothes and expensive jewelry when your figure is gone and your neck is wrinkled? I want it now, Arden. Now. While I'm still pretty enough to feel good about myself. Decide, Arden. Decide what you want. Do something positive for once in your lifetime. You've allowed guilt to rule you because you failed that day in the woods. And in a way, you failed again when you were stupid enough to marry Adrina. Say it now, that you take me and not her. I want out of this miserable situation. Today.
Appearing torn by indecision, Arden glanced at me, at Vera, then stared at Sylvia, who shambled into the room. She meandered over to my bed and tried with clumsy hands to brush my hair, even as she tried to say my name. But Vera was there, and she couldn't even make her hands stop trembling. Appearing deeply troubled and frustrated, she slowly turned around and spread her arms wide as if to protect me.
Whenever she can, Sylvia sneaks up on me and jumps me. She clamps her teeth into any part of my body she can grab hold of. I hit her, kick her, stomp on her toes and pull her hair to make her stop, but she hangs on like a bulldog. She's crazy.
On and on, Arden stared at her without speaking. Then he turned his eyes on me, lying like a stick of wood, my eyes half open, my lips slack. The IV dripped its solution into my veins, and my hair lay in limp, dull strings on the pillow. I knew I couldn't appeal to him now.
Yes,
he said heavily, as the mist began to form around him and Vera.
I guess you're right. Adrina would want to die rather than live on as she is now. She's so young to have suffered so much. Isn't it a terrible pity that I've never been able to help her, when all I ever wanted to do was save her from more suffering? Oh, God, if only I could have done differently, then maybe none of this would have happened.
His head bowed. The last I saw of him this time, he was kneeling by my bed, his hand clutching mine, and on our clasped hands he rested his cheek that was wet with his tears. And just barely, before I floated to that nowhere they called sleep, I felt the warmth of his face, the wetness of his tears. I tried to speak, to tell him I wasn't going to die, but my tongue stayed frozen, and all I could do was drift away. Last Rites. On what I was to find out later was a clear summer day. It came to me as in a dream that my death was at hand. The purposeful way Vera strode into my room that morning told me so much. She came to my bed and stared down into my face. I kept my eyes almost closed, knowing my lashes would give me the appearance of being asleep. Her cold hand touched my forehead to feel its warmth.
"Cool," she said, "but not cool enough. Are you recovering, Adrina? Your skin looks better today. Why, you almost look half alive.
I do believe you've put on some weight, though I'm sure Arden won't notice that." She giggled.
"He seldom sees anything but your face, even when he sneaks in here to move your arms and legs. Papa does that too, and his eyes are always so full of tears he can't see anything either. The two of them are so burdened down with guilt, it's a wonder they can still get up in the mornings and go to work."
She glanced at Sylvia, who'd taken to sleeping on the floor near my bed.
"Get away from there, idiot!"
She made some movement that I took to be a kick. Sylvia squealed in pain, then jumped up and staggered over to her favorite dim corner. There she crouched down to keep a suspicious eye on Vera.
"Last bath time," sang out Vera. "Wouldn't want the coroner to think I neglected you. Gonna wash that man right out of your hair," she sang gaily. "Gonna paint that face and make you look pretty, but not so pretty he'll cry too long."
Like a musical farce, she was making my death as she came toward me bearing a basin of warm water and several towels. Quickly, she disconnected the IV and eased me around so my head dangled off the side of the bed into the basin of water. She used several pitchers of warm water to rinse off the lather. Next, I was moved back onto the bed, bathed, and over my head she tugged one of my prettiest nightgowns. She seemed to notice some difference in the flexibility of my body. She looked disturbed, hesitated, then shook her head and began brushing and arranging my dried hair. Several times she used her thumb and forefinger to spread my lids and peer into my eyes.
"Did I just see you move? Adrina, I could swear I saw you move. You winced, too, when I pulled your hair. Are you only pretending to still be in your coma? Well, I don't give a damn. Keep the game up and pretend long enough, and in your grave you'll find yourself. Already you've pretended too long, Adrina. You're so weak now, you can't do a thing to help yourself. Too weak to walk, too weak to talk, and Papa and Arden have gone away on a day-long conference in Richmond. They won't be home until late. Soon, I'll be rushing off to the beauty parlor in Arden's car, and our new maid named Nola will be instructed to look out for you."
Every sense I had quickened, became sharper. My survival instincts came alive as I quivered with apprehension, wondering how she planned to kill me and what I could do to save myself. Seconds later, Vera used my dressing room to apply my makeup to her face. I caught the whiff of my own French perfume, smelled my own dusting powder. Then I heard her fumbling around in my closet. Finding what she wanted, she came into view wearing my best summer suit.
"It's August, Adrina. August in Paris. What a honeymoon that's going to be. Before this month is over, Arden Lowe will belong to me, and he's got enough evidence on Papa to have him locked away in jail.
He doesn't want to use it, for dear Papa has reformed and no longer cheats and embezzles. Your noble Arden made him quit. I don't really want Papa in jail anyway. I want him where I can put my hands on him and make him pay and pay and pay. And when I have all his money, into an old folks' home goes dear Papa, and dear little Sylvia will get her just rewards too. I think it's very romantic for you to die in the summer. On your grave, we can lay all the roses you love. Remember that first box of Valentine candy Arden sent you, and I ate every piece? I hated you for attracting him even then, when I was more his age. You've been unconscious 3 months. Do you know that? I pray you can hear. According to your husband, you and he finally found each other just before your fall down the stairs. Really, Adrina, you do know all the right ways to mess up your life. Too many people fall in this house. Someone should have Sylvia locked up before somebody else takes a tumble. You shielded a killer, Adrina, but you won't have to worry about anything after today. I'm driving to the village, making a big show of myself. While I'm gone, the job will be done. I'll come home to find you dead. She laughed and then turned to look hard at Sylvia. The clickety-clack of her high heels on the floor sounded ominous as she went out the door. I was alone now, except for Sylvia. I tried to speak, to call, and though I made some gurgling, throaty noises, nothing coherent came out. Sylvia, I willed, come to me. Do something to help me. Don't let me be here when Vera comes back. Please, Sylvia. Please. In her corner, Sylvia played with several prisms, using them to send separate light rays that crossed. Looking up every once in a while, she vacantly stared my way. I had to find my voice. Desperate need gave me the strength to speak. Sylvia, help me. It came out as little more than a moan, but Sylvia heard and understood. Sluggishly, she rose to her feet. Excruciatingly slowly, she wandered not to my bed, but to the dressing table, which was not reflected in the mirror over the dresser. But I could hear her fiddling around with the pretty jars and bottles. She squished the perfume atomizer, wafting to me the scent of jasmine. Sylvia, I moaned again. Help me. Take me away. Hide me. Please. Please. Sylvia. Help. Adrina. Something had her attention. Now I could see her reflection in the dresser mirror. She was looking my way, startled, almost scared appearing. Inch by slow inch, she ambled toward my bed. In her hand, she carried my silver hand mirror, and from time to time she glanced at her own reflection, as if fascinated by the pretty girl in the glass. And no wonder. When she held her head high and threw back that tangled mop of hair, she was breathtakingly lovely. I found my voice again, weak and trembling. Billy's cart, Sylvia. The little red cart. Find that cart. Put me on it. Slowly, slowly, she came to gaze with unfocused eyes into my face. Then she looked in the hand mirror. I could tell what she must be seeing. She looked more like me now than I must look like myself. Please, Sylvia, help me, I whispered. The door opened. My heart almost stopped beating. Vera was back so quickly. What had gone wrong? Then I saw her reason for coming back. She held a plastic bag full of cookies, the very kind of cookies that Sylvia had such a passion for.
Look, Sylvia, charmed Vera in her sweetest voice. Pretty Sylvia hasn't had a treat like this in years and years, has she? Mean Adrina won't let you eat cookies, but nice Vera will. Come, pretty Sylvia, eat your cookies like a good girl, and I'll bring you more tomorrow. See where your half-sister puts your cookies? Under the bed.
What was she up to? In another few moments, Vera was on her feet, picking up her purse, which was really my purse, and softly chuckling to herself, she headed once more for the door.
Goodbye, Adrina. Goodbye. When you get to heaven, say hello to your mother for me. If my mother is there, ignore her. Dying won't hurt much. Your food supply will stop, that's all. The machine functioning for your kidneys will shut off. It won't hurt. Maybe when the respirator stops, you'll just stop breathing. It's hard to tell, but you can't last long. All that grieving for Billy helped run down your health long before your fall. And did you know I contributed a little drug to your tea?
just a little to keep you in a constant apathetic state. Bang! She slammed the door. No sooner had she closed the door than Sylvia was on her knees and under the bed. When next I saw her, she was munching on a handful of cookies, and in her free hand was the single plug that connected all my machines to the outlet. Good God! Vera must have fastened the cookies to the plug with the picture wire I saw dangling from Sylvia's hand. Sylvia plucked the wire from the cookies, threw it down, then stuffed her mouth again. I felt strange. Really strange. Sylvia was growing fuzzy. Fuzzier. I was dying. Do you want me to die, Sylvia? Desperate now, I concentrated every last bit of willpower I had on controlling her. Determined to live, I fought the drowsiness that tried to take me down, down. As if consolidating her strength, trying to focus her eyes and keep them that way, my younger sister touched the tear that slipped from my right eye.
Audrina?
She loved me. The bread cast upon the waters of Sylvia was coming back a thousandfold. Oh, Sylvia, quickly! Vera could come home sooner than I think, and Sylvia was so slow. Excruciatingly slow. It seemed like hours passed before Sylvia came back with Billy's little red cart that had splintered badly when it had clattered down the front stairs.
Vera,
mumbled Sylvia, tugging on my arm and trying to lift me off the bed.
Vera.
Panting, gasping, I managed to make a small sound that sounded like yes, and then I willed Sylvia to try to pick me up. Certainly I couldn't weigh much, but her strength was so minimal that she couldn't manage to do more than tug and pull on one arm and one leg. She succeeded in pulling me off the bed so that I landed on the thick piling of the soft carpet. The jolt sent rippling waves of shock throughout my body, ripples that reached every nerve ending.
Audrina.
Yes, Audrina wants you. Take her away, down the hall to a safe place. I was difficult for her to manage. When she had my buttocks on the cart, my head and upper body were off and my legs dragged. Sylvia studied me with a puzzled look. Then she leaned to shove up my knees, and since that seemed to work, she gave a grunt of pride and with struggling efforts pushed me into an upright position. But when she let go, I fell sideways. Again, she shoved me back on the cart, then looked around. I slumped over on my pulled-up knees and tried to latch my fingers together to keep my legs in position. My head lolled heavily, jerkily when I wanted to lift it. Every small movement I made was so difficult, so painful that I wanted to scream with the agony of doing what used to come so easily. Desperation made me frantic, yet it lent me an unexpected spurt of strength. I managed to lock my arms together with my fingers in such a way that I kept my legs from straightening out. I was like a crudely wrapped package. Wringing wet with perspiration, I waited for Sylvia to begin pushing me out of the room.
Sylvia. Audrina,
she happily murmured as she got down on her hands and knees and began to shove. Fortunately, she'd left the door open when she came back with the cart. Talking all the time in her mumbling way about me being her baby now, she mentioned again that Vera was bad. The grandfather clocks in the lower hall began to chime in all their myriad voices. The clocks on the mantels joined in, the clocks on the tables, dressers and desks told the hour of 3. Someone had finally synchronized all our clocks. The thick carpeting down the halls, meant to soundproof and give privacy, made it very difficult for Sylvia to shove me along. The little wheels dug deeply into the pile and resisted. No wonder Billy had asked Papa to have the carpet taken up when she used the corridors. But now it was back to hinder my escape. Where could Sylvia put me? Tediously, Sylvia shoved, panting and heaving and talking gibberish. She stopped to rest often, to take her prisms from the huge pockets of her loose, shift-like garment.
Audrina. Sweet Audrina.
Nah. Weakly, I turned my head. I moved spastically. I managed to look over my shoulder to see Sylvia's rapt expression of pleasure. She was helping